This is a Glass Box Media Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to This Week in Travel, the show that talks to some of the most interesting and notable travelers in the world. Learn about the top travel stories from the world of travel, get valuable travel tips, and have some fun in the process. Now here are your hosts, Gary Arndt and Jen Leo.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Travel. My name is Gary Arndt, coming to you from lovely northeastern Wisconsin. And with me, as always, is the co-host with the most, Jen Leo. How are you doing, Jen?
Doing great. Happy to be here. Just back from Colorado and New Mexico.
What were you doing there?
Spring breaking. Cora had a week off school, so we went out to visit my cousin and see what his corner of the world looked like. It was beautiful.
Excellent. And our guest this week, new guy to the show, Brad Nyva. He's the executive director of Travel Southern Oregon. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm great. Thank you so much.
So why don't we just get right into the discussion? When most people think of Oregon, they're probably going to think first and foremost of Portland, which is the largest city, kind of gets most of the attention. Southern Oregon, and I've been there a couple times actually, much less populated than what you're going to see kind of towards the border in the north. Why should someone visit Southern Oregon? What's kind of the elevator pitch that you're going to give to someone?
Natural beauty, not very populated, home to national parks, be it Crater Lake National Park. We're just literally an hour away from the Redwood National Forest, which is right on the border of California and Oregon. And just beautiful open landscapes and iconic small towns that are there to welcome you and makes it very fun to explore.
So let's start with some of the actual attractions. And I think the one that most people would probably visit and the one that is probably that most people will probably be familiar with is going to be Crater Lake National Park.
It is indeed. Yeah. That is a number one visited location, excuse me, not just for our region, but for the whole state of Oregon. It is a very popular location. As with all national parks, though, they are very popular. And so one of the challenges we're having right now is to actually start kind of managing. I'm encouraging people to go there for a day, maybe 2 days, but you might want to move on to other places just because of the amount of people that are visiting the area.
What's been happening with park visitation? Is it gone up?
Oh, it's gone up dramatically, and it was going up pre-COVID, and then even with COVID, it's exceeded those records. So that's a Southern Oregon phenomenon. A little bit is that because we have a lot of open space, we are, you know, 4 hours south of Portland, and we're 5 hours north of San Francisco. We have become a very popular destination to kind of get outside. Have some elbow room and to explore. And with that, the national parks all over the country have seen a huge influx of visitation. And one of the challenges, at least at our park, is that we have a dormitory style for all the staffing. And due to COVID, we've actually had to reduce our staff housing significantly, which then puts a burden on the park because we don't have the manpower we used to have, you know, number of things there. As well as just trying to be compliant during COVID. So we had a record July, record August, and well into record October, November for visitation, which is just really, again, an interesting phenomenon. We normally don't see that kind of visitation, but these aren't normal times.
That kind of surprises me. I mean, I've heard of everyone going out on with their RVs and doing more domestic travel, but I wouldn't have thought it would have translated into record numbers of tourists.
Yeah. At least at Crater Lake, because there's an entrance gate, we have a car count and we can get an idea. And every month coming out of the park, we're seeing, record numbers. And that's an interesting, again, I want to call it a Southern Oregon phenomenon. And I know there's other places around the country that are seeing these effects. But, we actually in tourism and the tourism trade and our hospitality industry, we're having the best year we've ever had. And that's in COVID. And it's just an interesting place to be. And I think, again, it's that desire to get out of the major metropolitan areas and to get into the more rural environments. There's a sense of safety there. You're just not crowded. I think people are really escaping. And so we know now once things start opening back up and the cities, the cities aren't going to stay empty, but they will, people start wandering back towards the cities. And so we'll start seeing hopefully, a little of this crowding issue disappearing over the next 6 to 8 months.
Brad, some of my earliest travel memories are from Southern Oregon, believe it or not. And
really?
My grandparents lived in Grants Pass. And so we went up to see them yearly, and they took us to Crater Lake in the summer, in the winter. I think I preferred the winter with the snow everywhere. And they took us, I'm going through your website, southernoregon.org, and the things to do. And I've done so much of it and have so many good memories going to see plays in Ashland year after year and riding on the those Hellgate cruisers on the Rogue River, the jet boats. I've done a bunch of stuff over there. And now I had no idea, because of course this was decades ago, I have no idea you have so many activities that my family would enjoy. Golf.
Yeah,
had no idea about golf. Ziplining. Had no idea about ziplining. Tell me a little bit more about where the zip lines are.
Well, so we have two large zip lines. Let me just back up. I'm talking to you from Grants Pass, so that's fun to that's where I live, and my office is at my home right now, but beautiful area and right on the Rogue River here, so I see those jet boats go by every day when the season starts back up. But really, we live in a very interesting place that is almost undiscovered. People just like you, the surprise, like, I didn't know you had this, I didn't know you had that. And so family travel has always been kind of our mainstay. And it goes back to kind of our history of what we have in our backyard. And we have beautiful mountains and beautiful hiking. And then we have this spectacular river called the Rogue River. And it's just a great place to come and play. And so with that, we've got other products that have become available, and the zip lining is one of them. There's one right in the Rogue Valley, just halfway between Grants Pass and Medford, in the town of Gold Hill, Oregon. And that's a really fun one. And what we're seeing is some collaboration with some of these products. So they have zip lining, but it just happens at the bottom of the zip line, there's a fantastic winery. And then a mile away from there is the Rogue River. And so they have a fun trip called the Zip, Dip, and Sip. So you're zip lining, rafting, and drinking wine in one day. And so that's the creativity that we've been able to offer. And it makes it a really fun experience for people to explore. The other zip lining is over near Crater Lake. It's called Crater Lake Zip Lines. It's on its way to Klamath Falls. It's just on the outside of the national park. And a great place for families. I think one of the things that, anytime you're in these rural mountain areas, you do have to drive places. Car ride is 2 hours to get somewhere. And so I love from a family travel mode, there's a neat opportunity that like it created like zip lines. Like the kids have been in the car, they got the wiggles, they got to get out. And this is a great place for families to stop. So they have your traditional zip line, but they also have a kid zip line for kids that are younger age who wouldn't be allowed on the main ones. So the kids, smaller families, younger families can certainly take advantage of all that. So that makes it fun. So there's the outdoor components, but then the other thing that's just really exploding here, and I don't think people are new about this, is just our wine industry is just absolutely growing and growing and growing. On average, we're getting 4 to 5 new wineries a year. And small area that's been agriculturally focused for years and has grown wine grapes for many, many years is really starting to mature and become a great destination for wines. And so we're seeing a big influx out of the Napa-Sonoma area. A lot of winemakers are moving up here. We have lots of land and we have plenty of water. And that's making us a very popular destination. And we also make really good wine here. So another great advantage for our region.
And it looks like Klamath Falls. Is that where a lot of the wineries are happening?
That's a little dry over there. That's on the other side of the mountains, and it's called a high desert. No, the main wine region is the Interstate 5, the major north to south freeway that runs through Oregon, Washington, California, right up the Rogue Valley. So basically from Ashland, Oregon, straight all the way up to almost Eugene, Oregon, is what we consider the Southern Oregon wine region. And so the major two AVAs we have is the Rogue Valley AVA, and then the other one is the Umpqua Valley AVA. And if you keep on going north, you'll end up in the Willamette Valley AVA, which is the famous Oregon section of wine growing.
Yes, love their Pinot Noirs. I guess it's the eat and drink section of your website where I'm seeing a lot of the lot of restaurants for Klamath Falls.
Yeah, well, we have culinary is a really important component of travel. We always know that, and you know, I look back at my parents were very well traveled people, and my father's not with us any longer. But one of the things that is always when you were talking about, well, how's your trip? Well, we ate here, we ate there. You know, it food is such a component to travel, and I think that's the fun thing. So. Really common here because of the agriculture background we have is most of the restaurants just use what's in their backyard, which is fantastic. We have the opportunity to do a lot of farm to fork offerings. There's a sense of pride here that people are like, well, these blueberries are from over here and the wine you're drinking is from over there and the beef that we have tonight is from over there. There's this connection with the earth and the relativity of what we have in, right here at our fingertips. And I think people, visitors like to see that because they always want to try the local fare. They want to try a local wine. They want to try a local jam. But at the same time, I think our culinary scene and our chefs here in the area just really love that they have these resources just at their fingertips. They don't they can head over to the farmer's market and pick up, you know, something that will be served on plates that night. And that's really unique. We don't have, you know, it's not available to everybody around the country. So we're lucky in that regard.
I want to go back to Crater Lake because I'm a big national parks guy. Mm-hmm. In fact, the last time I was in Southern Oregon, that was kind of the purpose of my trip is I was going around visiting a lot of the various parks. I was shocked. I was there, I believe, in late May. I think it was just around or maybe just before Memorial Day. And there was still a ton of snow. Like, not just, because I'm from Wisconsin. We get snow. But we don't get this much snow. I mean, there was like 20 feet of snow in some places. And it was rather shocking because I don't usually even think of snow and Oregon that much. But there was a shocking amount of it because of the altitude.
Yeah. Yeah. So Crater Lake gets a very large amount of snow on an annual basis. And I just literally got an email this morning from the park administrator with a picture of gigantic tractors pushing snow in the process of starting to open up the road. So as you probably remember, Gary, there's a beautiful drive that goes all the way around the lake. It's known as Rim Drive. And that is open in the summer, and it's a 33-mile drive, and you can explore and see the lake from all sorts of different angles. But during the wintertime, the park is open just as much as – well, I should say it's open. It's not open as much as the rest of the park in the summer, but there is a section that they keep the snow plowed and allow car access into the park. We see a lot of winter travel, be it snowshoeing or cross-country skis. The Park Service does a fantastic snowshoe hike. That's a daily occurrence. During COVID, it's been paused, but we do encourage people to come in the wintertime. Now, the snowpack is just amazing. I mean, there'll be 20 to 30 feet of snow, and visitors will come in June and July and actually, like, be shocked to see snow. And then, of course, everybody's out throwing snowballs and sliding around. But one of the things that's really interesting at Crater Lake is, as you probably remember, it's a crater inside of a mountain. It used to be called Mount Mazama about 8,000 years ago. The top of it blew off, and this crater was left inside. All the water that fills that lake is actually from snowmelt. There is no rivers or creeks that feed that lake. It is all that snow. And so annually, you've got this 20-foot, 30-foot of snowpack. It melts and goes right into the lake, and that's what keeps the lake full of water. Of course, in the summer, there's evaporation, and the lake drops maybe about a foot. But then all that snowpack comes back in the winter, melts, fills the lake back up. So really interesting ecosystem there, and as well as a lot of science that's being built out of Crater Lake. There's actually a full-time scientific team with the National Park Service that has a science base there. The gentleman who leads that actually has written 3 different college textbooks with some of the science in regards to how this ecosystem works, which makes it really fun and exciting to explore.
And it's also, I believe, the deepest lake in the United States.
Deepest and the clearest, yeah. So you can see almost 180 feet down into the lake. It is, I want to call it clean because it is clean. Like I said, there's no water coming into the lake except for snowmelt. And so I always tell visitors one of the greatest things, and this happened to me actually, it's the only body of water you can swim in and drink at the same time that I've ever been aware of, that it's that clean. And I was exploring in the lake probably about 10 years ago, and I was out on one of the science-based team's boats, and the gentleman driving the boat and showing me around, and it's like, here, do you have a water bottle? I'm like, yeah. And I hand it to him, and he takes my lid off, and he just dips it in the lake and hands it to me, and I'm like, you're joking, right? And he's like, no, it's perfectly clean. Drink away. So it's fun. It's a real natural wonder. And you may have seen one of the big campaigns for Oregon, but Crater Lake has always been a destination for this, for our state, and then for the West Coast. It's just a spectacular place to visit.
The other national park that's in your area that I don't think gets nearly as much attention as Crater Lake is Oregon Caves.
It's so true. It's one of those undiscovered parks, and where you have Crater Lake that is very popular and everybody goes to. Oregon Caves is one that's often kind of forgotten, and it's ideally located because it's right in between the Redwoods National Park and Crater Lake National Park. So it's on that same road, but it is off the beaten track a little bit. You have to go about 25 miles up into the park. But a spectacular location. These caves were discovered 100 and some years ago, and just a really neat place to explore and to play and to look around. There is a really neat lodging property there. Currently, it's under remodel, so it'll be opening up in March of 2023. But it's called the Oregon Chateau, and at one time, some of the historic lodges at our national parks around the country, this park also has one. And I should say, this isn't technically a national park. It's a national monument. But it has one of those fantastic lodges. And so the Chateau is a beautiful place to stay and explore and just enjoy your evening there at the caves. One of the neat things...
I was just going to ask you about that Chateau, Brad. And I wondered if you had stayed in it.
I've never had a chance to stay in it. I'm looking forward to when it reopens to get the chance to stay there. It's a historic building and the preservation of it. And there's a fantastic group called Friends of the Oregon Caves who are in the process of, at one time, the the whole chateau had all its furnishings were custom made out of a company out of California. And this is back 80, 90 years ago. And now in this remodel phase, the Friends of the Caves are actually out. They're buying up all the furniture because once upon a time, they decided to shift out the furniture and people bought it. Well, they're out now pulling it back in. And so it's going to be back to its heyday in that it'll have the furniture that was built for this facility. And original decking is being put back on the building. Lots of neat things to bring us back to its grandeur. And we know it's going to become a really key place for Southern Oregon visitors to explore.
I'm curious what happened with the Shakespeare Festival in Ashland during the pandemic.
Yeah, so Shakespeare Festival, for those who don't know about it, it's an Tony Award-winning theater company, one of the most popular theater companies in the country, based in Ashland, Oregon. And it is a cute little town just literally 10 miles from the California border. Ashland is a quaint little tourism town, but it also home to a university. And then 9 months out of the year hosts the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And a couple of things with the festival, just a little more background, is that I think when people think about Shakespeare, oh, my God, I don't want to go to Shakespeare. Well, of the 11 plays that are in rotation on an annual on a season, only three of them are Shakespeare. The other are more contemporary and have and are really fun. There's musicals, things like that. Not uncommon to see somebody that you see on TV there for the season. So it's a very popular place for some really fantastic actors to come and enjoy their summers in Ashland, Oregon. But Shakespeare Festival, just like any of our arts and culture and our music events, it's been affected. The doors are closed and they've had to really step back. And we're excited that right now we haven't officially announced it because the governor of Oregon is actually the one who kind of is setting the pace of our reopening. But right now it looks like we're going to have the Oregon Shakespeare Festival back on the stage in September of this summer. So of 2021. And typically in normal years, we end up the festival starts in March and usually ends the end of October. This year, because it's kind of a condensed season, we're going to start in September. We're going to go all the way to January 1st. And we're really excited about that because I think one of the things that's iconic in Ashland is just a really cute town. And it's a really neat place to visit in the holidays. And we are being told right now that they're in the works of creating a holiday play that will run from Thanksgiving to through Christmas. Another reason to bring people to the area and to and see Ashland in a different time of the year. I think a lot of folks, like I said, it's often a summer festival, but this will give us an opportunity to welcome people in the months that they have not visited Ashland in the past. So there's three theaters. There's one outside that is the Elizabethan Theater, and then we have two indoor theaters. Of course, for December, November and December plays, we'll be on the indoor theaters. We won't be using the outdoor one.
Brad, I haven't been there in many years. So when I was there, there were just a few hotels, just a few places to stay downtown. What are the accommodations like today?
Well, Ashland is an iconic tourism town now. So you have fantastic hotel options from simple studios all the way up to beautiful suites and all different price ranges. There's quite an Airbnb market here as well. So those are options that we see a lot of folks are taking advantage of. So we have plenty of rooms and a very welcoming to everybody. At the same time, I mentioned earlier the culinary scene. Ashland really has taken on the culinary components. And so it is not uncommon that you could literally just park your car and you walk everywhere. You walk to dinner, you walk to the theater. You can explore a number of places. The only reason you hop in a car is maybe to go out and explore some of the wineries that are within 5 to 10 minutes away, which is a fun way to spend your afternoon drinking some good wine with some great views.
Everything we've talked about so far is kind of in the mountains, or I would say roughly there's kind of a corridor along that Interstate 5, maybe, you know, Kalama Falls isn't, but you're in the mountains. But when you go east a little bit, you kind of get out of the mountains and it starts to get into that high desert area. What sort of stuff is out there? Because I think that even gets fewer tourists than a lot of the other parts we've been talking about.
It does. It's just basically, you know, what our mainstays of transportation are. And so Interstate 5 going through the Rogue Valley, of course, 25,000 cars a day go through there. That's why it is. But yes, as you go up towards Crater Lake and you go over the mountains and come into the valley to the east, that's known as the Klamath Basin. And that is basically a spectacular basin and range area that is about 3,200 feet above sea level. Big ponderosa pines and open skies and beautiful rivers that flow through the area. And so it is much less populated. It's more ranching and agricultural based. And then if you go even farther east, you end up in a community known as the Outback, Oregon's Outback. It's actually a county known as Lake County, but these two counties in this region kind of coexist together in that you have big sky, you have outdoor offerings with hunting and fishing and great mountain biking as well, and lots of cows. So it's a fun place to visit. I think what we in tourism, we're always trying to, how do we get people to come and see this? Because I think it's often one of those things that we try to It's not sexy. It doesn't have zip lines. It doesn't have things like that, but it does have some natural beauty that's just spectacular. And one of the projects we've been working on, over the last year is we're really seeing an increase of, astrotourism or dark skies. And this is just a spectacular place to do that. So we're seeing more and more interest in that. People are coming out to actually enjoy the night sky. And it's funny when you look at a rural community and they're like, well, we want to offer tourism. How do we do tourism and what do we have to offer? No one, you know, years ago, no one ever looked up in the sky and like, well, that's going to make people come. But that's exactly
what's happening. That sounds amazing.
So
are there tours or is it sort of DIY?
It's right now DIY, but it's the whole region is in a process right now of getting the international identification as an official dark sky. Utah has jumped on this and Colorado has jumped on this. And one of the largest dark skies in the world is in this Oregon Outback area. And so going out over eastern Oregon, southeast Oregon is just incredibly dark. And so we see that this is a product that people are going to be more and more, once it gets its official recognition, we see people are going to be coming quite a bit. So I would expect we'll have tour operators that will start doing dark sky tours and things like that.
That's really exciting. I think I'm really to go out and do that and then to come back and go to a winery and then do some more adventure stuff. I think I would prefer to go do the dark sky stuff first and then all your typical tourist stuff.
Well, and, you know, Creative Outfitter who's doing that should probably combine the two together. So we go look at some dark skies and drink some good Oregon wine. So.
And for, you know, if you don't have a map in front of you, we're kind of talking about, you know, most of the stuff we talked about at the first part would be, say, north of California. This is now starting to get north of Nevada or in that southeastern corner of Oregon, maybe near Idaho.
Yeah, very unpopular, not as far out over as Idaho, at least, but that's where the dark sky will be going, yes,
right.
In regards to that. The Dark Sky Project crosses a lot of land. And it's a fun thing to explore, this whole dark skies concept. National parks are jumping all over it, because they can actually dictate the amount of light that is at a national park, because that's the biggest thing is light pollution. And so, and there's meters. We're in a process right now of setting up dark light meters that are spread out throughout this region to measure the dark sky so we have an idea of how dark it really is. And it's fun. It's a fun project, and it's being tourism led, which is really neat because it's offering some of these communities that did not have a tourism economy. Now that they have the opportunity that they might be, and then we'll have visitors coming to the area. They also will spend the night in a hotel, which is always good for a community.
Brad, is the Mazama campground in your outback region?
Actually, the Mazama campground is the campground that's right near Crater Lake National Park. So you have a number of campgrounds and lodging options feeding Crater Lake, and Mazama campground is one of those campgrounds. So it's not quite in the outback. It's right on the border.
Cool, because I'm looking at a night sky picture from that area, and it looks amazing.
Well, yeah, so that's in a national park. So with that, again, you know, the national parks have done a great job of keeping their light pollution down. And anything that's taken, Crater Lake's very picturesque. And for anybody who's visited there, they often look at the pictures and they're kind of like, is it really that pretty? I mean, can you see the stars like that? Or is the lake really that blue? And it really is. There's no Photoshop going on. It's really a spectacular place to visit.
If someone is flying in, where are they going to fly into? And then let's say you're going to fly in and rent a car. What would be the best place to do it? What's the best airport? And then kind of explain the concept of the circle of discovery that you guys have been marketing.
Well, those two things actually kind of work together really well. So if you were to fly in directly, if you really just wanted to come for Crater Lake and to spend 3 or 4 days here, you'd fly into our airport in Medford, Oregon, known as the Rogue Valley International Airport. We have nonstops coming out of Salt Lake City, Denver, Los Angeles, Seattle, Portland. That's kind of the we're a regional hub airport. Now, one of the things that we see is about 85% of our visitors come by car. And so it's not uncommon that people fly into the major hubs, be it Portland, Seattle, to the south of San Francisco, and they rent a car and then they do a big loop. And so that would give them, you know, anywhere from 7 to 10 days of exploring Oregon and Northern California if you're coming out of the Bay Area, or likewise Seattle or Portland, you know, doing a big loop of Oregon over 7 or 8 days, including the mountains and coast and everything in between. And so one of the itineraries that we've worked on that I'm really happy with, and it's been a fun one to work on, is something called the Circle of Discovery. And it's a national park tour. And in that 7-day itinerary, you can visit 6 national parks, which makes it really fun. And so it starts in San Francisco, goes up Highway 101 up the Northern California coast, which is just spectacular. And as you get up to the Oregon border, then you cut east and you come up a road called the Redwood Highway. So you'll be coming through the Redwoods. So that's your first national park. Then you come up to Oregon Caves, which we talked about a moment ago, then over to Crater Lake National Park. Then you hop over into Klamath Falls and then Klamath Basin, and you end up at a place called Tule Lake, as well as Lava Beds National Monument, then down to Mount Lassen, and then back to a place called Whiskey Town, just south of Redding, California, and then back into the Bay Area. So that's a really neat 7 to 8 day loop. And what is really ideal, again, when I talk about travel with families, is that each one of these parks is about 2 hours apart from each other. And so, you know, you can stop, explore, have fun at the park, move on to the next place. You know, lots of times for the kids to get out and run around and have fun.
I basically did this ride. I didn't start from San Francisco. I actually did kind of a big loop and visited all the parks. The Tule Lake one is kind of interesting. It's right outside of Lava Beds, and it was actually a facility where Japanese Americans were kept during World War II. Yes. And you can they're still kind of developing the park when I was there. But if you should probably check to make sure when it's open. But it's very close to Lava Beds. Like, literally, the border of Lava Beds is almost like, you know, right outside the city. You can easily get there within a day.
Gary, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's actually a project that's just dear to my heart, in that this is one of these locations where the Japanese internment camps were right after the bombing of Pearl Harbor on the West Coast. A large collection of Japanese Americans were collected. If you were lived within 100 miles of the Pacific Ocean, you were told within a few days that you need to pack up and get ready to move. And these Japanese American families had to just pack up, grab a bag, take what they had, go to the train, and they were all hauled off to these locations. And unfortunately, that whole corridor of Northern California, Tule Lake area, then down to the south, housed many, many Japanese Americans. And I'm not aware of, A, that story is not shared that often, and I think it's something in our history that we really should be more aware of. Really telling those things in history that I think we as Americans always I just love when people explore and they get a chance to like, oh, I didn't know this happened. And that story of the Japanese internment camps is something that still needs to be shared.
Yeah, and it's technically in California, but it's literally like right on the border. I think it's like 5 or 10 minutes. Yeah.
We have the closest hotels. That's why it falls within our tourism range.
And by the same logic, Redwood National Park, it's technically in California, but Crescent City, which is kind of the main city for it, is just over, like literally just over the border from Southern Oregon as well. And if you're going to fly in, Medford might very well be one of the closest spots to fly into.
Yeah. The road that goes out there, this highway 199, the Redwood Highway is funny. If you live on the Oregon coast on the south end, you actually have to go into California to get to your home. And so that's, a very popular route back and forth throughout the area. But, so some people live in Oregon and work in California and vice versa.
Excellent. Anything more before we move on, Jen? Any more questions for Brad?
No, he totally makes me want to go back. Of course, this always happens, especially to a place that I've been to before, but I haven't been in, gosh, it's got to be a decade or maybe two, 15 or 20 years. It can't be that long. About 13 years, probably 13 or 14 years is the last time I was there.
It hasn't changed. It's still a great place to visit.
All right, then. Let's move on to... Now, mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead, Jen.
Go ahead, Gary.
Oh, I was going to say, we can move on to our destination picks of the week. And I'm going to pick one that's kind of appropriate. I'm going to go with Lava Beds National Monument. If you're doing this big loop, which I did, it must have been almost 2 years ago now. Lava Beds is right outside of Tule Lake, and it's a national monument, and it has a fascinating collection of lava tubes. There's a fascinating history of the region, of stuff that happened there. And again, it's one of these spots that probably, this could easily be a national park, I think, without question. There's often, this naming thing as to whether something is a monument or a park. And if tomorrow the Park Service were to wake up and say, oh, it's now Lava Beds National Park, it wouldn't really shock me at all. There's even some interesting thing. There were some places in the lava tubes where evidently a lot of the native people who live there, they could actually create ice in the middle of the summer, because water would freeze at the bottom of some of these tubes because of the high elevation. And going into Tule Lake and Lava Beds National Monument, and I should also say there's a Tule Lake National Wildlife Refuge where you'll see a fair number of migratory birds, depending on the time of year that you're there. This is a fantastic place to visit. And, again, any part of a trip that you're going to make, it's just kind of south of Klamath Falls. And you could easily go down there on a day trip if you happen to be in Klamath Falls, and definitely worthwhile. So, yeah, Lava Beds National Monument. Jen, do you have a recommendation, a place?
I do. One of my favorite restaurants in the area, I looked it up, and I'm pretty sure this is it. It's called River's Edge Restaurant, just right on the banks of the Rogue River. Brad, do you know which one I'm talking about?
I do, and I'm impressed that you know of it. Nice work.
Yes. So this was definitely a happy place for me. Now, when I went a long time ago, it was more casual fare, and I had the best pulled pork nachos of my life at this restaurant. But again, a long time ago. So I did look up if the restaurant was alive and well, and it is, but it's a bit of a fancier fare now. And the menu still looks amazing, with lots of seafood. And it looks like they've got terrific salads and lots of your sort of higher end stuff, like steaks and prime ribs, and but still having lots of fish, cod, salmon, Chilean sea bass. But the atmosphere on their outside deck overlooking the Rogue in good sunny summery spring weather, really amazing place. So that would be my pick.
Jen, you're not going to believe this. I've been there.
Have you?
Yeah.
Gary, you don't go to fancy restaurants. I can't imagine what you wore to this restaurant now that it's all fancy.
Shirt and pants, but yeah, I was just looking at it right now. It's like, yeah, I've been there. So yeah, I can vouch for it. Great meal. Yeah,
that outside deck is just amazing. You're just going to want to relax and spend all day there.
All right, Brad, do you have a recommendation?
Gosh, you know,
I understand that because you work for the tourism board, you can't, you know, play favorites. So it doesn't even have to be in Southern Oregon. It could be somewhere else if you want.
No, I'm gonna pick Southern Oregon. I moved here about 15 years ago, and I bought a rafting company on the beautiful Rogue River, and I had the pleasure of running a company there for about 10 years until. A big travel company wanted to buy my company, and I did that. And in turn, I moved over here to this tourism role for me. But the Rogue River is a spectacular spot. And I would recommend a place called Galice Resort, and that's Galice Resort. It's an iconic river destination in the summertime. You see rafters and kayakers floating down the river. It's the spot you stop at the end of your day on the river for a cheeseburger and a cold beer and an ice cream cone. And it's just good living. It's those places that I think that make memories for people. And like, oh, you know, we floated the river, but boy, we stopped at this neat restaurant. And so Galice Resort would be my place to recommend people to visit.
Nice.
Excellent. So let's move on to our picks of the week. And I'm going to do an update on a pick I've done before because I've kept talking about Starlink. And Starlink is probably something I know that actually in a lot of the forums I'm in that people in Southern Oregon are loving. This is the satellite internet service that Elon Musk has launched. It's now gone. So when I first started talking about it, you had to be north of like 45 degrees latitude. And you know, 45 is like Minneapolis. So you had to kind of really be near the Canadian border and the southern part of Canada. Well, they've extended it now. And there are people, I think, in like northern Arizona that are now able to sign up. So a really big part of the country is now available. Plus the UK, it's now open. Most of Germany and southern Australia. So if you are in Victoria or South Australia, and I think parts of southern New South Wales, they're now starting to fire it up there. And if you are Australian, and I can say this, I've been to Australia many times, your internet is horrible, and you know that. And a lot of people there are just jumping for joy that they now have this service. So definitely, and they just launched, you know, as they're doing all the time, more satellites are now getting close to, I think, 1,200, where it was probably around 600 when I first started mentioning it.
Gary,
so
you were kidding.
Check it out. What?
For our tip of the week, you did Starlink again. When we talk about, why don't we just have a Starlink column?
We probably should.
Yeah.
But
I'm not gonna let you do that. You talk about Starlink every single time. And actually, when I was out in Mancos, Colorado, and I was looking at land, I was thinking, ooh, if I get any land here, I've got to get Starlink. However,
oh, you can totally do it.
We just need to have a Starlink update, and that can't be our pick of the week.
All right, that's a Starlink update. Done. Jen, what's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is, I don't know if anybody of our listeners know Guy Kawasaki, but he is an author and really, really heavy into the social media scene. I think he wasn't he Apple's sort of a commissioner of spirit for them, an ambassador, Apple's ambassador, a long, long, long time ago. Well, he has started a podcast called Guy Kawasaki's Remarkable People podcast. And just this morning, I got the notification that he was interviewing Paul Theroux. So Paul Theroux, highly notable adventure novelist, New York Times bestselling travel writer, that podcast just came out today. So there you go. Guy Kawasaki is getting a few travel people into his podcast.
You know that you could download that podcast on Starlink?
So are you saying we both have to come up with new...
No, I'm just saying.
I think we should call the Starlink column 2 degrees of Starlink.
Actually, we're getting to the point now where it's just going to be in a couple months. It's just going to be global, so it's not going to be relevant anymore. Brad, you got something for us?
Oh boy! Encourage people to look at our website. It's southernoregon.org. The other great resource is traveloregon.com. It's our statewide tourism website. It'll show you everything about Oregon and at the same time direct you down to Southern Oregon, but other great places around our state.
Excellent. Jen, where can people find you online? Jen, you're muted. Hello, Jen.
You can find me online on Twitter at Jen Leo, and I've been more active on my BitCurious Mom side of things, so at BitCurious Mom and BitCuriousMom.com. where I have been trying to help people learn more about Bitcoin.
Jen, we should sell the first episode of This Week in Travel as an NFT.
Yes.
There you go.
Good idea, Gary.
And as usual, you can find me over at the Everything Everywhere Daily Podcast, where I'm pumping out episodes every single day. And until next time, listen to us next week on This Week in Travel.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts.